Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Some years ago, writer and poet Stephen Faulkner had an idea, and his son actually had the idea with him, to sort of bond in a very dramatic fashion, take a 9-week, 1,000-mile canoe trip. And this was a canoe trip that had a lot of history behind it, the route that Father Jacques Marquette, an explorer, Louis Joliet, or Joliet as we call him, took between Michigan and St. Louis, Missouri in 1673. Part of the reason that this trip took place was because Stephen had lost his job as an obituary writer for a small town newspaper, and he had time and a desire to get to know his son better. He is now the author of a book about this experience, Water Walk, A Passage of Ghosts, and he is associate professor of English at Longwood University. He is joining us to talk about the book and also the film that has been made of this remarkable journey. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
It'll be fun to talk to you about where you are now, because I know where you were then, so I'm interested in hearing about your journey. The film, I told you, will be, it's going to be screened in Milwaukee tomorrow, and there are a lot of Milwaukee elements and Wisconsin elements in this film. Joining us, the director and star of the film, Water Walk, Bob Cicchini. Hello, Bob. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, hello. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And we'll be welcoming phone calls for both our guests during the course of the hour. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Let's start with you, Stephen. I was interested in the work that you were doing. You were really an honored obituary writer, and you had just won an award. The film starts with that, and then you lost your job. It has led you to all kinds of different wonderful possibilities in your life, but you were, a lot of people can identify this I'm sure, at loose ends when this film starts.
That's right. This is the movie version. There are a few changes between the movie and the book, but it's worked out really well for me. You don't want to lose your job in mid-career. But I've been able to pick up from there, and the movie describes those early days and the difficulty of encountering no job and in your 50s.
Yeah. You start the book with some pretty dramatic stories of the people that you saw as you were delivering newspapers. You were a guy who was working all kinds of jobs to make ends meet, and you have a particular place in the book and in your heart, I'm sure, for people who are living on the edge.
That's right. There's so many Americans today who have been put out of their jobs for one reason or another, and I know that's really true in Michigan, and I'm sure it's true in Wisconsin, too. It can seem hopeless at the time, trying to walk around the town you live in and apply for jobs when everyone else is trying to apply for those jobs. And I think that that really comes out in this movie. There's a remarkable scene. Bob, of course, plays me, and where he walks into a store and applies for a job, and there's a teenager there who has a job and thinks it'd be really cool if she became his boss. So, those are kind of difficult issues for someone who's been employed all his life.
Mm-hmm. We have that clip. Just happen to have that clip. Let's listen to that, and then we'll meet Bob and talk more about the film.
Hey, Mr. Faulkner.
Oh, hi, Beth. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine.
Can I help you with something?
No, actually, I was just finishing up an application here.
Oh, an application for Justin?
No, not for Justin. Actually, it's for myself. The news outsourced my job.
Wow. Things must be really bad at the newspaper.
Yeah, well, I guess things are bad all over.
So what kind of job are you looking for?
I was kind of hoping for the reduced stress kind, where I can sort of just stand around the computer department and go, I don't know, better ask someone else.
Hey, if you got a job here, maybe I could be your boss. How cool would that be?
That would be so way cool, Beth.
Just one thing. There hasn't been a job opening here for months. There are no jobs.
Bob, we haven't even heard from Bob yet, so we will right now. Bob Cecchini is director of the film Waterwalk, and he plays Stephen in the film. Hello, Bob. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
What captivated you about this particular story? Why did you want to direct it and star in it?
Well, there's a number of reasons. Well, one thing, the first thing that leaped out at me was I grew up in Michigan, and as a child, we often went. I grew up in Detroit, and as a child, we often went up north as a family, up to Mackinac Island, up to the Upper Peninsula, up around Alpena. Spent some time on Lake Michigan, and those were very, very fond memories for me. And so, the opportunity to revisit some of those places, as well as places in Wisconsin and along the Mississippi and the Wisconsin and the Fox Rivers. It was just very enticing to me to do it as a father. Taking a son along on the trip was also something that I was interested in doing because, my experience of taking those trips with my father leading the way are just they're just indelible memories for me, and they mean a lot to me. So that was the first thing that leaped out. And then the second thing, I just thought it was a great story about family, and the nature of family. What is the true meaning of family? What is the nature of familial love? How do people who live under the same roof for years and years and assume truly that they love each other and have been taking care of each other? How do you find yourselves at a point 20 years down the road where you realize that things haven't worked out exactly the way you thought they were? And is it possible to mend fences? And those were basically the themes that I appreciated. And then, of course, the more up-to-date themes about the economy and the things that happened to Steve with his job, particularly in the print industry, the newspaper industry, which is going through enormous changes.
Sure is.
And so those are the basic topics that that interested me.
Mm-hmm. And Stephen, whose idea was it to take this trip? And the second part of the question is, this was an elaborate and rather dangerous trip as well. Was it you wanting to get closer to your son? Was it your son trying to get closer to you? Or did you both come up with the idea?
Well, in the movie, my son writes a high school paper about the journey of Marquette and Joliet, and gets the idea to go on this extravagant canoe trip after, and we really didn't have much experience canoeing at all. We'd been one afternoon on a river.
Oh, great. And oh, man.
So, I wouldn't recommend this to fathers who want to bond with their sons, because you might lose each other, especially on Lake Michigan. But fortunately for us, the first 3 days of our journey on Lake Michigan had really calm weather. And then old Lake Michigan tried to blow us out to sea on the third day. And we barely survived that. So I wouldn't recommend that plan. But Justin, wanted to go on this trip. And you see this in the movie where he and my wife talked me into it.
And it was a dangerous trip. Lake Michigan, we live right next to it here in Milwaukee, and it's a gorgeous body of water, but it can be a very dangerous body of water. You had some experiences that were, you almost drowned, didn't you?
Yeah, probably about three times, and twice on Lake Michigan. Once when the wind suddenly caught us, we were about a mile out from shore, and the wind came off the shore, which surprised us, and big white caps started kicking the canoe around, and we had to fight our way back into shore. There's some good clips of wind on Lake Michigan in the movie, and Bob had to experience some of this too. And there's a scene where they both capsize. I don't think that was in the script, but they did.
Hmm. And Bob, so you had to prepare, you and your son, as canoeists, you had to learn how to do this to do the film.
Mm-hmm. Well, as Steve just mentioned, they went into it relatively unprepared in terms of their canoeing skills. So Chase Macer, the young actor that plays my son, that plays Justin in the film, And I didn't really spend a lot of time trying to prepare because, after all, you know, when we started, when they started out the trip, they were certainly not experts. And so, you know, we just tried to be very authentic with it. We didn't take a lot of lessons. We actually did take one lesson where we learned how to swamp a canoe and a few of the key points, but we certainly did not spend a lot of time training ourselves as canoeists for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of had to learn as we went along, and I think you see that it's in the film. It gives it a certain authenticity, I think.
Yes, it does. How did you know where you were going on this journey, Stephen?
Well, I had found a translation of Marquette's own journal in the basement of a library at the University of Kansas. And reading that, he had created his own map, and it doesn't quite look like a modern map at all. Lake Michigan looks awfully obese in his map, but it plotted the basic route that they took. And then this is back before GPS and all of that, and so I ordered satellite maps from the government, and we were able to kind of plot our way along the Upper Peninsula down to Green Bay, and then across Wisconsin on the Fox and the Wisconsin rivers.
Did you get lost?
You know, we did get lost, and this was probably my fault because I thought, well, once we're on the Wisconsin River, we can't get lost. It's a big river, right? And the Mississippi, I mean, who could miss the Mississippi? But we got lost in a swamp on the Fox River. It's about a 36-square-mile swamp, and it was in flood at the time, which we hadn't planned on. And so we ended up canoeing through forests. And finally ran into an old fisherman way back there who we scared to death coming up on him in the forest. And he guided us out. So we got out of that swamp. And then once we got on the Mississippi, the upper Mississippi is just full of islands and sloughs. And we tried to get away from the kind of boat traffic and barge traffic by taking some of these sloughs on back and naturally got ourselves lost there. And had to kind of find our way out. And that comes out in the movie, too.
And there are scenes in the movie, Bob, that look at management of rivers, what the Army Corps of Engineers has done to rivers. Did you want to instruct us on the environment of rivers in this film as well? Is that a part of the film, and did that require some research to find out what we're doing to our rivers?
That, you know, that was sort of a peripheral issue, I guess you could say. You know, when we shot the movie, we had a lot of help from people like Friends of the Fox, for instance. You know, and there was another group, the Wisconsin Heritage Parkway people, and you know they. You know, they're on a quest themselves to try to continue to improve the environment of the rivers and let people everywhere know how beautiful they are, what a great place to visit they are. But to be frank about your question, it wasn't a point we were trying to make in the movie itself about the environmental aspects of the rivers. It was something that we were trying to work with the organizations that I just mentioned in a way that we could show our audience how beautiful these waterways are.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps in so doing, we could convince other authorities out there to continue their efforts to try to improve these waterways.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we tried to do, which wasn't that difficult, was just to capture the natural beauty of these environments. Just absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are indeed. Mm-hmm. And tell me, Stephen, about, obviously one of the reasons for this was to have an adventure, because what's life without adventure, and adventures inform the rest of our lives as well, but also to forge a relationship with your son. How did that happen? Did it happen gradually? Did you have tense moments along the trip? And how does just hard work and trying to navigate an adventure together bring you together?
Well, hard work, it turns out, does bring you together. You end up, you know, you're at the two ends of a canoe, and you've got to rely on each other. And especially when the wind blows or the current's against you, you've really got to learn how to fight it out. And one thing we discovered very early was that how hard it is to canoe for 8 or 9 hours at a time.
Oh, I imagine. Oh.
When I once we got, you know, we'd get out of the canoe at the end of the day, and I could hardly stand up. So, yeah, we did have to learn that. We had to fall into a routine. And but, you know, nature does a lot for you in the process. It's such an incredible immersion in real life out there in nature, taking the weather as it comes, the wind and the storms and the rain and the heat. And when we started on Lake Michigan, it was pretty cold. So all of that is something that just begins to slow you down. I think that's one thing we noticed canoeing like that day after day, week after week, month after month, actually, for 2 months, nature has its own pace. And it's a beautiful world if you just take the time to experience it. Mm-hmm. I teach creative writing now in Southern Virginia, and my students all want to write about, you know, vampires and superheroes and wizards and talking animals and wicked queens and things like this. And, you know, I just try to tell them, you know, you just need to experience the real world. It's a fantastic place. Who could have dreamed this place up? And you don't experience it just on a television set. I read an article recently where the Kaiser Family Foundation did a study of 8 to 18-year-olds, and on average they spend 7.5 hours a day on digital media.
Oh, my.
And, you know, you can be introduced to nature in a book or on a television set, but you really have to get out there and experience it. And that's one thing I'm really pleased about the movie is the way it gets out into the natural world. They filmed it on location in many of the places we actually were. And you get a sense of, you know, not a jazzed-up special effects Hollywood-type movie, but the real river, the real landscape, some of the people we ran into.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that filming. Much of it took place here in Wisconsin. Here's a scene from the film. We were asking about bonding and how difficult it is to forge a relationship after you've been somewhat estranged for a long time. This is from the film Water Walk, and it's it's Bob who plays Steve, listening to his son who's talking about how hard it has been to forge a relationship with his father.
I feel like Moses after they crossed the Red Sea. You gotta go through with it now. You know, going back to Egypt.
What are you talking about?
Well, as you know, Moses never made it to the Promised Land. You know, God let him see it, but he never got there.
Kind of makes you wonder why it took them 40 years to travel such a short distance.
You know, travel is, it's all through the Bible, Justin. It's a metaphor for life, for what we're doing right now.
I thought we were just paddling to St. Louis.
Well, that's how all great journeys start out. You know, it's a simple idea. Once you leave home, things get a little more complicated.
What, are you worried?
In the Bible, everyone's worried. They fear the unknown. They're afraid they're going to be changed by their journey, and they don't know how.
Dad, you're making it really hard for me to bond.
Dad, you're making it hard for me to bond.
That always gets a nice chuckle.
Yeah. I can understand. Yeah. It's one of the nice part of the films. Nice parts of the film, though, is this wisdom that comes through, and that's from you, Stephen, from the way you live and all that you've read. But those are nice moments. I think we can all relate to that, wanting our children to develop an interest in history or in poetry or whatever. And I think that goal is accomplished, don't you, through this canoe trip, Stephen? Or Bob, don't you think it was?
Oh, the bonding of our relationship?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And yeah. also an interest in history and the environment. I think that your son, the young actor who plays your son in the movie, got some of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. That was it was a truly wonderful experience shooting the film because you know, the chemistry between Chase, the actor who played my son, who I mentioned earlier, and myself, was kind of instantaneous, but at the same time, we continued to develop a very strong bond as the film went on. And, you know, and I think it became reflected in our performances, in the chemistry of our performances playing the characters. And I think it gave the film a certain kind of almost cinema verite, sort of documentary-like feel to it, because it's just very real, the relationship that we developed. We did a lot of improvising because of that, because we just felt so comfortable with each other. But at the same time, you know, there was a distance because we had only met, you know, a few weeks prior to shooting. So it had this great sort of chemical equation in there of two people who didn't really know each other, but at the same time had this kind of, I don't know, psychic bond, you know, that
right.
we continue to develop as the shoot went on. And I think it's reflected in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. We'll take phone calls for our guests in a moment. We're talking about the independent film Water Walk. It was shot largely in Wisconsin, and it tells the story of a father and son who, in an attempt to understand each other much better and to connect, because their lives are very, very busy, set out to recreate Jacques Marquette and Louis Joliet's canoe voyage across Lake Michigan, down the Fox and Wisconsin rivers, down the Mississippi to St. Louis, Missouri. And the movie is based on the memoir of that journey. Stephen Faulkner, poet and writer and professor of creative writing now in English at Longwood University. The book is Water Walk, and that's also the name of the film. It's going to be screened tomorrow night at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee at 7 o'clock. And if you want to go to waterwalkthemovie.com, you can find other places that the film will be screened in Wisconsin. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We can go many directions. There are some of you listening who have done similar kinds of adventures, different but with the same purpose, to get to really know people in your family or your friends. And we'd love to hear from you this hour. Some of you have been on canoe adventures. You can talk about that or whatever. Our lines are open for you. We'll be with you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now. Let's start with Katina in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. I am very excited to hear this author on the program. I actually read his book. I was given it prior to my own experience. Last summer, I paddled 740 miles on the Northern Forest Canoe Trail, which starts in upstate New York and ends at Fort Kent, Maine. Mm. And I'm pretty sure there's probably one of my paddlers that were with me is probably listening to this program this morning. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I have 53 days on the trail and experienced the kindness of strangers and enjoyed the whole daily paddle and what the canoe and the weather and everything brought to it.
The kindness of strangers, that's a part of the movie and the book that we haven't really talked about. And it's true. It's one of the wonderful things about traveling. You never know who you're going to meet. And sometimes they're very kind. Stephen, you want to start with that, the kindness of strangers?
Yeah, that was certainly a surprising part of our trip. You know, we time after time, people came to our aid. You know, we didn't know where we were going to camp night after night. We'd find a sandbar somewhere or a little clearing in the forest. And sometimes we were in the middle of a city, like paddling up the Fox River through, you know, Appleton and Neenah, all those cities that are strung together. And we camped one night in a city park. And then we capsized and almost got swept over a dam in Appleton, and that comes out in the movie, too. And our journey would have ended there without the help of a couple of newspaper reporters. So here's for newspaper reporters. They came down to report our accident because someone had called them. And the first thing I asked the man who came was, well, can you help us find our paddles? And so, you know, without even interviewing me, he loaded me up in his truck and off we went looking for paddles. And so when we couldn't find them, he took me to a sporting goods store so I could, you know, buy paddles. And then that night, the news editor of the Appleton paper, Bernie Peterson, took us in for the night, let us dry out all our soaked clothes and everything, and put us up for the night. And that's just one example of many, many strangers who helped us. Some of them were very kind. Some of them were very strange. I guess that's where we get the word stranger. you know, some of the humor of that, I think, comes out in the movie, too.
Mm-hmm. And when you cast these people in the movie, did you find them in these various locations in Wisconsin, Bob? Or are they actors from Hollywood? Who are they?
Most of them are actors from the Milwaukee area. Mm. You know, it's coincidentally, you know, speaking about the kindness of strangers, I mean, that is certainly a big part of the plot of the script. As Steve mentioned, there were times where the trip itself would have ended had it not been for the kindness of strangers. But the same thing happened to us in the making of the film. There were probably several times where the production might have come to a halt, maybe not permanently, but perhaps temporarily, had it not been for the kindness of strangers. And you know, I have to put the theater community of Milwaukee, you know, at or very near the top of that list. You know, there were you know, kind citizens of Appleton that helped us make the movie. The same way they helped Steve and Justin complete the trip. But the actor, many of the actors in our movie are very well known to, you know,
yes,
Wisconsin theater goers and particularly Milwaukee area theater goers. You know, we got Mary McDonald Kerr, who plays my wife, and John McGivern makes an appearance, and Deborah Staples and Angela Annone and Lee Ernst, and it's a long list. Eva Balistrieri, whose scene you played earlier, it's a long list of Milwaukee area actors, and it was a big part of making the movie. One of the key issues that I had as director was solving the casting issue, because it is an independently produced low budget picture, and we didn't really have it in our budget to be able to fly in a bunch of actors from Los Angeles and New York City and put them up as we did this trip. And we made an important decision also early on. Roger Rappaport, our executive producer, and I made a very important decision to go ahead and shoot this whole thing on location. There was some discussion early on about shooting it in and around Muskegon, Michigan, which is just across the lake from Milwaukee, and that's where Roger's home base is. And while there are, you know, plenty of good actors in Michigan, there really isn't one particular epicenter where they all live, as it is in Milwaukee. So I was concerned about finding a sort of a core base of talent that was in an area that would be accessible to us, who would also be affordable. And so we hit upon the idea of using Milwaukee. I had gone to school with a couple of actors, a guy named Doug Mancheski, who is a fairly well-known actor in Wisconsin, and Mark Corkins, who I went to Wayne State University with. And I knew those guys had made their careers in Wisconsin, and I knew they were both terrific actors, and I thought to myself, well, if those guys are making a career of it as actors, there must be other actors also there who are really excellent. And so we got in contact with Sandy Ernst, who is the casting director at Milwaukee Rep, and she guided us towards, you know, all that plethora of talent that there is in Milwaukee. And so most of the character roles, with the exception of a few, are played by Wisconsin actors, Milwaukee actors. We have a few Michiganders, a few folks from Chicago. Of course, Richard Reilly is in it, who is a Hollywood actor, but he is from Wisconsin, a graduate of Marquette. And And so, Milwaukee is hugely represented.
Yes, it is. It's great.
And I'm so grateful to have hit upon that treasure trove of talent you guys have over there.
Yeah, we're an undiscovered delight in many ways. You talk about it being an independent film, low budget. How do you raise money to do a low budget independent film? Is that hard?
Yes, it is. Basically, what it boils down to is, calling people on the phone and asking,
will you give me money? Oh, my.
And this would be a better question for Roger Rappaport to answer, because he was the guy who generated it all. I mean, I think he financed a huge chunk of it himself, which is a sacrifice. But Roger's a dreamer. He's a big dreamer, and he's a huge optimist, and he's the guy that had this crazy wild dream and never having been involved in movies before, decided to go ahead and do it. And, I give him a lot of credit for that. He did a lot of phone calls. He had a lot of appointments for, appointments for coffee with people where, he'd spring this question on them. And that's basically what it is, just grassroots stuff, As far as I know, we didn't have any real corporate involvement or anything like that.
It's very much a grassroots effort. Remarkable. Katina, thank you very much for your call. Sounds like your adventure was great. Ralph in West Bend is next. Hi, Ralph.
Yes, I have a canoeing question. In Portage, where the Fox River touches the site of Fort Winnebago, there's a marker indicating that Father Marquette camped there and reached the Mississippi 4 days later, which is some paddling, especially since there was no canal there between the Fox and the Wisconsin. They had to do the three-mile portage. I want to know how long it took you to paddle from Portage to the Mississippi.
That's a good question. We were used to fighting the waves on Lake Michigan. We went about 2 miles an hour on Lake Michigan on average. And then coming up the Fox River, it was in flood. We were fighting that current, trying to head for quiet waters on the inside bends. And so we were used to going very, very slow. And then when we came to the canal at Portage that the Army Corps of Engineers built back, just after the Civil War, then we were able to make our way through that and get on the Wisconsin River there at Portage. And then we were flying. I mean, we had a current with us. It was amazing. I mean, there was one dam down the river that we had to portage around, but we had a pretty good current. I think it only took us 3 days.
And how I know that you were rooted in the history of Marquette and Joliet. How much did you know about their journey, and how did their journey guide you? Were you trying to do similar timelines? Were you trying to follow it exactly? I know that there was very, very strict attention paid to making sure that you never took any rides, even though you were offered some.
Yeah, my son resented that. I kind of wanted to do the authentic trip, and we were offered tows on Lake Michigan, and a sea captain offered to put our canoe aboard his big ship and take us to Green Bay, a journey of 12 hours, which took us 2 weeks.
Oh, my.
We wanted to kind of do the authentic trip. I had read the journal, and I was trying to recreate that to some extent. Of course, the landscape, particularly in Wisconsin and down the Mississippi, has changed a lot with the coming of towns and cities and all of that. But we made our way down, and once you get on the Mississippi, it is kind of like an industrial highway. It's not the river to canoe, unless you have a good map and can take those quiet waterways that kind of bypass all the industrial traffic on that river.
Mm-hmm.
But we did try to follow it. Marquette in his journal will skip, 300 or 400 miles, unless something interesting happens. He doesn't mention it. So if they get attacked by Indians or something like that, then he'll happen to mention that. He wasn't the daily journalist, which, Lewis and Clark were. So we don't know as much about the trip. One difference was that they went another 600 miles down the Mississippi further than we did. What I did was I started on the same day they did, which was I think it was May 25th, and I set aside the same amount of time that they took, which was 62 days. That's what I took off work. I had to get a second mortgage on my house to pay for this.
Well.
and just took 62 days. Well, we made it to St. Louis. They went another 600 miles down to the Arkansas River. And then, of course, they had to turn around and go back the other way, another 1,500 miles all the way back, which we didn't have to do. So in some ways, we tried to be authentic, but we couldn't accomplish the whole feat.
Yeah, you were pretty authentic, though, I must say. You were pretty authentic. Ralph, thanks for the call. Betsy in River Falls, hi.
Hi, I live on the western side of the state, and I looked up the website, and you're doing Dodgeville and Platteville and all Milwaukee. Are you ever going to show the movie on the western side of the state? After all, we're kind of near the Mississippi.
Bob.
Well, I know that we are currently working on getting as many locations as we can. I can't answer that question definitively. But if you continue to check our website, we're going to continue to update interested audience members about where we're going to be. I also wanted to point out to our last caller from Green Bay that we are going to do a screening in Green Bay on July 18th at the Meyer Theater. But as far as western Wisconsin, I think we're still working on it. So stay tuned, please.
Thank you, Betsy. Dory in Door County. Hi.
Hi. I was struck when he said it took 2 weeks instead of 12 hours by climbing on the boat. It took 12 days to paddle in part of Lake Michigan. Where did they sleep and how did they eat and stuff during that 12 days?
Well, it's not as difficult as it was for Marquette and Joliet. They had to kind of pull their food out of the lake or try to shoot it. I think they had cornmeal. That's about all they had, a lot of cornmeal, which was kind of wreaked havoc on their French stomachs. But for us, every 15, 20 miles or something, you'll run into a little settlement of some sort, a little town, and we just bought groceries and took them along with us. And as far as finding places to camp, that was just, when the sun starts to go down, you got to find a place to camp. And you just take any option that's available, some of them better, some of them worse. One night we camped in some rich guy's yard, and he never knew we were there, I'm sure. he was back behind the tree line in a big house. But we thought we could explain ourselves if we had to, but we didn't get arrested.
Mm. And you ate some pretty weird things too, didn't you?
Well, yeah, we did. We did shoot rabbits in the movie. There's a section about Justin making up a sauce out of squirrel brains,
right?
Is something I'd learned to do when I was a kid. I was a big squirrel hunter and raccoon hunter in the hills of Kansas, actually, and I had. I shot a squirrel once, and I heard that you could eat the brains. I don't really recommend it. In the movie, Justin makes up a pretty good sauce.
Yeah, I guess he does. It doesn't sound real appealing.
It doesn't look
as
that appetizing either.
What's that, Bob?
I said it doesn't look that appetizing either, I have to say.
Did you actually make it for the film?
I think we used oatmeal and beans and something else mixed together. Deborah Staples does a very fine job of being repulsed.
Yes, yes, yeah. It's sort of a nuanced because she doesn't want to be repulsed.
Yeah, she's trying to be polite.
Yeah. Our phone number is 800-486-8655 if you'd like to join our conversation. Dory, thanks for your call. This hour we're speaking with Stephen Faulkner, who's the author of Waterwalk, A Passage of Ghosts, which details a trip that he took to recreate the Marquette and Joliet canoe voyage across Lake Michigan, down the Fox and Wisconsin rivers, and down the Mississippi to St. Louis. He took this journey with his son, and it's quite a story. And Stephen is a gifted writer and poet. He is now he was unemployed when he started this journey. He's a dreamer as well. He's now associate professor of English at Longwood University. And also joining us is Bob Cecchini, who's director and star of the film Water Walk, which is almost like a documentary of Stephen and his son Justin's trip that they took. The film is going to be screened tomorrow night at the Oriental Theater here in Milwaukee at 7 o'clock. And if you go to waterwalkthemovie.com, you can find other locations around the great, lovely state of Wisconsin where the film will be shown. So we welcome your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@wpr.org, or you can leave a message on Facebook on the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. Talk@wpr.org is how you can reach us by message. And we have a message. Stephen, how is your son now? Justin, what's he up to?
Well, he's fallen in love with nature, which pleases me.
Great.
He's got a couple of daughters and takes them out and sits them around the campfire. And they're a little young for rappelling, but he took them rappelling. So he picked up that kind of risk-taking ideas of his father, I guess. He works in Kansas right now.
Hmm. Dwayne is our next caller in Hayward. Hi, Dwayne.
Yeah, I got a little bonding story for your father and son trip. We were doing, my 14-year-old son and I, many years ago, I think 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, we were doing a week-long trip in the Boundary Waters, and being 14, you know, he was in the front of the canoe the first day in the trip. I slipped on a rock, put 27 big long gash from the elbow to the wrist to my
Ooh.
Left arm.
Ooh.
And that thing took my left arm out for the trip. And he manned up, took over the rear canoe, and did all the heavy lifting on the portages, and we had a great time. And from this day on, he demands to be in the back of the canoe in charge.
As well, he should be in the back of the canoe. Oh, my. You never know what's going to happen, do you? I mean, accidents like that happen. Bob?
I think that we were very, very unfortunate, very, very fortunate, I should say, in the making of the movie, because everything you see us do, we're actually doing it. We didn't have any stuntmen doing stuff for us. And we did a lot of portaging, a lot of canoeing, a lot of capsizing. We made it through without any serious injuries. So I think we were very fortunate, very, very lucky. It is a grueling undertaking. By the end of the shoot, I was in much better condition than I was when I started.
I'm sure you were.
Yeah, and I kept having revelations of awe for what Marquette and Joliet and their men must have gone through, and how tough mm-hmm. and strong and resilient they must have been. It's just an enormous undertaking, and as Steve mentioned earlier, they made it all the way down to the mouth of the Arkansas River and back, and then mm-hmm. and Joliet then continued on to Quebec. It's just amazing to me.
It is amazing. Stephen, how tough were you before you started the journey, and how tough were you when it was finished?
Yeah, a lot tougher afterwards. I was a city guy, living in the city, doing pretty soft jobs at the time, and my son was too. We were both really out of shape. I mean, we ached in every muscle that we had, and in bones we didn't know we had in those first 2 weeks. And then gradually you get better at it, and you get tougher. I would recommend anybody who wants to do something like this to get out on a lake or a river and put some time into it before they start.
That's a good idea, isn't it? I can't imagine paddling that long. Your arms, because I've been canoeing, and after about an hour, your arms start hurting. To paddle for 9 hours a day, Lordy, that's a long time.
Yeah, it can make for a long day. Sometimes you just don't have an option. There's sometimes, especially along Lake Michigan, we'd be paddling along these bays that were just full of rocks, and you couldn't even get into shore if you wanted to. And sometimes that was a problem for us just trying to find some place to stop for lunch. Sometimes we couldn't, and we just have to eat or drink some coffee out there in the canoe and mm-hmm. try to take a rest and then just make our way on. So, yeah, it was a tough go. But the you know those Joliet and Marquette and their men, they went a lot faster than we did. They'd get up. You know, before dawn and take off. And the early fur trappers, too, who traded along Lake Michigan, they would travel all day long just flying along in larger canoes. But they must have been very, very strong men.
And they were on their knees, too, were they not? Didn't they paddled on their knees. I don't think they had seats in their canoes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, they had their legs folded underneath them, and we did that sometimes when the water was a little rougher, and we had to get a lower base of gravity. And I tell you, you sit on your hind legs there, folded up underneath you for about a half hour, and it's excruciatingly painful. You can't wait to stretch your legs out.
Yeah, Bob, how did you find Stephen? How did you find this story?
Well, I mean, you mean how was the project introduced to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, well, Roger Rappaport, our executive producer, is a book publisher by trade and a writer himself, mainly a travel writer. And he, Steve, sent Roger his book, his manuscript, as it were. Roger loved it, decided to publish it, and... Roger had a relationship with a guy named Bruce Shermer, who was our director of photography on the shoot. He had worked with him on a couple of documentaries. And Roger told Bruce about his interest in making a movie out of this thing. And it was just in its infancy then. He wasn't sure if he wanted to do a short film, a documentary, shoot it in Michigan or what. And Bruce and I are old friends. We went to college together, and Bruce recommended that Roger look into my career and my background to see if that I'd be someone who was of interest to him to play Steve. And so that's what Roger did. One of Roger's goals was to keep it all based in Michigan, Wisconsin, and the Midwest. He wanted it to be a product of the Midwest, and so. By and large, everybody that worked on the film is either still living in the Midwest and working there or is originally from there, has strong ties.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me a candidate. And then, Roger did some research on me. I got a call out of the blue one day. He said, I want to send you this script. He sent it to me. I loved it. He then arranged to come out to meet me in Los Angeles. And, we just went on from there. Originally, Roger and I were supposed to co-direct the film together, but... What ended up happening as we got closer and closer to the shoot, Roger realized that, the producing duties were just so demanding. He had to be away from the set quite a bit, planning our next stop, our next location, that it just became apparent that he wasn't going to be able to co-direct, and I ended up taking over those reins completely. And got a lot of help from a man named James Sparling, who is an actor and a director out of Chicago, and James ended up becoming our assistant director and post-production manager because, I realized that starring in and directing a film is a tall order, and I really felt like I needed someone to sort of watch my back, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So James took over those duties, and that's how it all came together. Mm-hmm.
And for you, Stephen, the journey gave you a book, certainly, and a whole change of life. You're now a professor of English.
Right. It became my PhD thesis. I think it was the first creative nonfiction thesis that was ever passed at the University of Kansas, where I was going to school at the time.
Mm.
So that gave me an avenue into the teaching profession, which I love, and a beautiful school in Southern Virginia where I teach.
Very nice. Well, it's quite a story. Gentlemen, thank you so much. All the best with continued sale of the book and with a movie, which will be seen all over Wisconsin in the next couple of weeks. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. Really pleased that you had us on your program. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Stephen. And the film will be shown all over Wisconsin, Milwaukee, tomorrow at the Oriental Theater at 7 o'clock, and then it'll be shown in Dodgeville, Boscobel, Platteville, Green Bay, Oshkosh, Spring Green, and Lancaster, and other places, I'm sure, as time goes by. Information on the screenings can be found at waterwalkthemovie.com, waterwalkthemovie.com. Thanks to Bob Cicchini, director and star of the film Water Walk, and Stephen Faulkner, associate professor of English at Longwood University and author of Water Walk, A Passage of Ghosts. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing this hour, and thanks to Brett as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News coming up and many more great conversations on the air for hours to come and years to come here on the Ideas Network. We'll be with you tomorrow again at 9:00.